Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining us right now, John Paul Morosi, MLB Network, Fox Sports. John Paul, Joe and Evan, how are you?
Hi, John. How are you?
Outstanding, gentlemen. How's everything in the beautiful city of New York this morning?
Oh, wonderful.
It's beautiful. Is there a sense of urgency right now, middle of June, with Tanaka out for maybe a month, is there a sense of urgency from Cashman to go trade for a starting pitcher sooner rather than later?
It's a great question. I think that all along, the Yankees were probably going to add a starting pitcher, and that was even true before Montgomery went out with Tommy John and before Tanaka went to the DL. I think the urgency has heightened. We know how tight the race is and will be all year with the Red Sox. And for now, the internal options are not that numerous. I think Hale and Loa Asiga are probably the two choices to fill in for Tanaka in the near term. But I think the thing about the Yankees, a point that I want to make is this, that they were very judicious, and appropriately so, in the way they spent their money in the winter. They have left themselves plenty of flexibility, at least as we conceive of it now, regarding the luxury tax threshold of $197 million. They have, by my calculation, about $12 million, maybe even more, to work with in terms of the trade deadline and trades they can make at that point in time. So that means Cole Hamels is in play. The rental pieces that we've heard about, they're all in play, the likes of Tyson Ross and Jay Happ. And if they want to go for more of the multi-year guys, like a Michael Fulmer or a Matthew Boyd in Detroit, they've got the pieces to go out there and get them. And interestingly, one team that's now recently emerged as being a possible seller of starting pitching, the Pittsburgh Pirates, a team they've done a lot of trades with in the past, and even Ivan Nova, I would say, is one possibility given where the Pirates stand right now in the National League Central.
Mm, interesting. John, how about this race, though, between the Yankees and the Red Sox? I mean, obviously, one of these teams is going to win 100-something games more than likely and have to play a one-game wild-card crapshoot. Who knows, against Seattle? Who knows? Maybe even Houston? Who knows who the team might be? But how do you handicap that race right now? Let's assume the Yankees do wind up with the pitcher, whoever it may be, which they will. How do you handicap that race going forward?
It's going to be a great race. I think one that when you look at the Yankees and Red Sox, I believe the next time they play, and assuming they still have the two best records in the major leagues, which they do right now, it'll be the latest they've had the best records in MLB and played since, I believe, 2002. And so that really tells us it's getting back to that stage of the rivalry. I'm of the mind that things changed forever and for good in 2004 when the way things happened there with the Red Sox winning the World Series, that the rivalry changed for good at that point in time. But I think that it's now back to that spot where these are the two best teams, maybe with the Astros lurking there as well in the major leagues. I think we're going to see the Yankees make that big splash for pitching, as we talked about. And the way the Red Sox have been able to play well with Mookie Betts being on the DL and the way they've addressed the need with J.D. Martinez from last year, of course, the Red Sox finishing with the fewest home runs in the American League last year, which was a big surprise, and they still were where they were in the division, winning the division even without a big power bat. I think for that reason, I think the rosters as they stand right now, I give a slight edge to the Red Sox, which I think just really accentuates all the more the need for the Yankees to go out there and get a major top-line starting pitcher to counteract the Sale, Price, Porcello group that the Red Sox have right now.
Well, part of the Yankee-Red Sox rivalry in the early 2000s, not only that they were both good, but they were both competing for the same guys. You know, the Yankees are trying to trade for Curt Schilling. The Red Sox get Curt Schilling. They countered with Randy Johnson a year later. When you look at the trade deadline, clearly the focus for the Yankees is adding a starting pitcher. Where is the focus for the Red Sox? They're getting nothing from the catching position. I mean, they're getting so little production. Is that what they're looking at? Where do you see the Red Sox priority being as we approach the 31st?
Well, a couple things on the Red Sox. And number one, I was told, and Nick Cafardo reported this recently in the Boston Globe as well, that they've been watching Kelvin Herrera very closely. I think we're going to see the Red Sox try to add one more late-inning bullpen arm, a very impactful one. I don't know if it's going to be in the division in Zach Britton. That might be a difficult trade to make in that regard within the division, but I do think late-inning bullpen is something that they're looking at. Also, you make a very good point about the catching. I'm a believer that it can be a challenge to change up too much about your catching in the middle of the year. You've got to have a catcher that would relearn the pitching staff and relearn the environment of that team. But one name, as we talk about the Pirates, that I think is intriguing is Cervelli. Now, Cervelli, as we know, he's been in the American League East before with the Yankees. I think he understands the pressure of that division race. So I think that maybe the learning curve for Cervelli wouldn't be quite as steep as it would be for another catcher. I think JT Realmuto is a possibility as well for Boston, but I think Cervelli, you understand with him what it's like to play in this division, those big games in Boston and New York late in the season. He's played in those games. So I think that would help the learning curve, I think, for Boston if, in fact, Cervelli was the choice. So I'd pay a lot of attention, whether it's Cervelli, Realmuto. I think those two names behind the plate, very intriguing for the Boston Red Sox, although I'll point out that the Red Sox farm system is not nearly as good as it was 3 years ago. Dave Dombrowski has come in and made a lot of big-time moves, which is the way that Dave has always operated, going back to the time he was with the Tigers. He's never been afraid to make a big-time move, and I think as a result, the overall prospect depth of the Red Sox is probably not where it needs to be if they're going to get a Realmuto or Cervelli, unless they are willing to include a Rafael Devers from the Major League Club, which I think could be a deal breaker for them in those types of talks.
John, how about Seattle? I mean, they've been red hot, as high as anybody. Do you buy Seattle in the long haul? I mean, they're doing this without Robbie Cano as well. I mean, how about Seattle?
It's a great topic, and I'm glad you asked about them because I think they're a really fun team to talk about right now. The way they play without Cano, I think they've got, if not the best record in the American League, the second best record since Cano left the lineup initially for the injury and then, of course, with the suspension. Do I think they're going to beat the Astros in the American League West? No. I think Houston just has the better team. Their rotation in Houston is one for the ages. It would be a monumental upset if anybody besides Houston won that division. But could I see the Mariners being a very difficult wild card team for the Red Sox or Yankees to play in that wild card game? Yes. And I think, of course, the irony is Robinson Cano can't play in that game. He can't play in the playoffs at all. But in that matchup, one-on-one, can Paxton out-duel a Severino? Can Paxton out-duel a Chris Sale? Yeah. And their bullpen has been really good with Edwin Diaz, and they went out and got Alex Colomé as well from the Rays to really layer in with that bullpen. I think we're seeing successful teams nowadays. They have layers of great pitching at the end of the game. The Mariners have now done that. They've gotten some surprising performances in their rotation from the likes of Marco Gonzalez and last night, again, Wade LeBlanc. So a surprising team. I think that Jerry Dipoto was never content. He's always going to try to make that next move, and I think he may well do that with their rotation. But a lot to like about the way the Mariners are playing as they try to end, guys, what's been, thanks to the Buffalo Bills getting to the playoffs last year now, the longest postseason drought in all of North American pro sports.
And that drought began after they won 116 games and lost in the ALCS
Very
to the Yankees.
Point.
And I give DePoto credit because it's odd when a guy gets suspended for PEDs now because they can come back, but then if you're in October, they can't play. And I think he said the other day when Cano comes back, he's not going to play every day at second base. And why would you? Because if you get to the postseason, whether it's a wild card game or a divisional series, the guy's not even available for you.
Right. That's an excellent point. Yeah, it was a very good report recently from Jerry Krasnick about that possibility and the way Jerry Dipoto was talking about his lineup. It's going to be a challenging time, I'm sure, for manager Scott Servais. Robinson Cano's been the face of that franchise, I think, alongside Felix Hernandez for a number of years now. He makes a mistake. He gets suspended for PEDs, comes back. There's probably some instinct that says, okay, well, get him back in the lineup because he's been one of the best players in baseball for a long period of time. But they're playing so well without him, and you've got to prepare your club to play in the playoffs without him as well. You got to get there first, but you've got to prepare and get your guys ready. It would be a little odd if Robinson Cano comes in and plays 27 out of 28 games in September, and then you've got to put somebody totally new in the playoffs to start at second base. I think the way they've been playing so far has been great. They've mixed and matched there. They've got D. Gordon playing some second. I think that was a very selfless and great decision on D's part to move from the outfield to the infield. They acquired Span, Heredia and center field has been very good for them at times. So I like the way that they have collectively made up for Robinson Cano's absence, and it's going to make it a very delicate conversation indeed, I think, for Scott Service once Cano comes back at the end of, I'll say this too, that this next couple weeks here, they've got the Red Sox at back-to-back weekends. So the Mariners, I think it's a really big test for them without Cano over the next 10 to 14 days.
Talking baseball with John Paul Morosi. John, Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, big free agents coming into next year after this season. I got to believe the Orioles, they're not re-signing them. They're going to probably trade them by the deadline. I mean, do you agree with that? And where would you see Machado going?
I do think he will get traded, but I also think it's important for us to remember this, that the Orioles do not always operate by the book and by what all of us expect them to do. Last year at the deadline, we were all pretty confident Zach Britton was going to go somewhere. And then I think ownership involvement and some things transpired, and all of a sudden he wasn't going anywhere. And oh, by the way, they went out there and traded for Jeremy Hellickson instead, so they added rather than sold. So the Orioles can really go against the grain here. So I'm always cautious to say, yes, Machado's going to get traded. I think a very objective analysis here says you have to trade him because he is someone who is very much in demand. You've got someone that can play shortstop or third base, which really expands the number of teams that you would think are in play for him. I think the Cleveland Indians, for one, are a fascinating case. Of course, his brother, Yonder Alonso, plays first base in Cleveland. So they could put Manny at third and move Ramirez to second. You'd have one of the best infields in all of baseball for a team that, much like the Nationals, is really all in on this year. Michael Brantley, a free agent after the season's over. Andrew Miller, Cody Allen. So this is really, I'm not saying the end of their window, but it might be their last best chance to win with this particular collection of players. So I think Machado to Cleveland makes a ton of sense. I would even maybe see him going to Arizona as a possibility, if not the Dodgers out west. So I think a lot of teams involved. I don't really see, I know there were some early rumors on the Yankees. I don't see that happening. I think there might have been some thought during the offseason, but I think the Yankees have to devote their resources so much to the pitching side of things, and I think that giving up Andujar would be a really big ask there, and I'm not sure that that's something that Brian Cashman would be comfortable doing for 2 months of Manny Machado. So I think Machado probably not going to the Bronx, but probably going somewhere.
The Orioles are weird. I mean, you're right about that. Why not? This is such a novel idea. I can't believe I came up with this. How about this idea that the Orioles re-sign the guy? He's 26 years old. He's the face of that franchise. They fell over backwards giving Chris Davis, who's the worst player in baseball, $180 million. And I get that's a bad contract, but how can you sell your fan base? We let Manny Machado go. Yeah, partially because we gave Chris Davis a stupid contract. You want him to become even more hated than he already is? How about the idea that the Orioles keep the guy? What about that one, John?
Well, it's a great question. It's a very fair question, and I think you're right, candidly. The Orioles spent a lot of money on Chris Davis, who has been, as you point out, historically bad this year, and that's going to be a very hard conversation. Also, let's not forget Adam Jones, a free agent after this year as well, along with Britton. Brad Brock nearing the end of his time probably with Baltimore as well in the next couple of years. So they really have struggled to develop a strong enough rotation. And also, I think for Manny, from his standpoint, if he was really willing to stay and wanted to stay, I think that deal would have been worked out already. And if I'm Manny Machado, if I'm taking a step back and saying, well, listen, I'll be able to play shortstop for somebody or play third base for somebody, and I look around the major leagues right now and look at the American League East standings, with the Red Sox playing the way they are and the Yankees playing the way they are, and the Orioles consistently unable to put together a competitive rotation, if your top priority is winning the World Series and all the offers are going to be somewhat similar, I just do not see right now how objectively you would say Baltimore gives me my best chance. I realize he was drafted by them and he's come up with them and he's made the playoffs with them and done a lot of amazing things as a Baltimore Oriole. But if you're looking at the next 5 or 6 years of your career, 7 years of your career, and the chance to win the World Series, I do not think Manny Machado is going to believe that his best chance is in Baltimore, Maryland.
What about Harper? Because Harper, I mean, I could see him staying in Washington. He won't get traded by the deadline. Washington, like you said, is all in. They're trying to win now. And I know Harper hasn't had the greatest year as far as the batting average. He's hitting home runs, driving in runs on base and all. But how about him? I mean, do you see him staying in Washington? Do you see him going somewhere else next year?
So beyond the end of this year, I don't. I think certainly he'll finish the year as a National. There's little chance that he'll be traded.
Right.
But I think it's probably better than 50% he's going somewhere else. And that's just, again, from having covered a lot of these major free agents over the years and the way these negotiations go, I'm usually a believer that whether it's Cano in New York or Pujols in St. Louis, when you've got a player of this stature and he has not signed a contract by this time, he's usually going somewhere else. That is as much of the reason why I'm saying this as anything else. Will he get great offers elsewhere? I think he will. I'm not sure where it's going to come. I think obviously the Yankees, having both Stanton and Judge, probably diminish the chances of that occurring. But Bryce Harper is really liked by a lot of executives and scouts in this game. I know he's a controversial figure, but I think he's going to want to go somewhere where he can really, in his mind, bloom in full, both from a standpoint of marketing, everything. Now, he can do that in Washington, certainly, but I think that he wants to go to whatever the next challenge is. I think he has always been a great student of the game, knowing where his best opportunities are to maximize, whether it's his legacy, his marketing revenues. I'm not saying it's LeBron the first time he left Cleveland, but it's maybe something like that, where he's really curious about where the larger baseball world is for him, and I think he's going to pursue those things. And my guess here, and it's an educated guess, but it's still a guess, is that he is going to be wooed on a greater level by somebody else that's not the Washington Nationals.
Interesting. I saw you tweet this. I think it may have been during the Saturday night broadcast about Jacob DeGrom and how the Mets think they can compete in the next 3 or 4 years, so they're not going to trade him. Can anything change that? Could the Mets continuing to play awful? Could a team blow them away? Is there something that could happen in the next month or so that changes their view on keeping Jacob DeGrom long term?
Perhaps. And I think until we see an on the record, bold faced, absolute statement that says he is not going anywhere, period, full stop, then I think we always have to believe there's a chance that he'll get moved. I think that's just a reality of doing business. And I think that Joel Sherman's column recently in the Post was excellent, in that Joel pointed out that the Mets right now have that commodity that the Yankees had a couple years ago with Chapman and Miller, that you have the most marketable pieces out there. You have to listen. You have to. And I think in their case, they will. I still think the chances of DeGrom moving are unlikely, just because the Mets do believe they can compete in that window. Of course, as we talked about with the Nationals and Bryce Harper heading out, the National League East, the competitive opportunity should get better for all those teams that are not the Nationals once Harper leaves, if he leaves. And so I think for that reason, the Mets will want to, I think, have as their default DeGrom and Syndergaard staying put. But with the need for pitching out there and some teams that have very rich prospect groups that need pitching, I think the Mets have to remain open-minded.
The thing is, I mean, you hit on it, and we've talked about this before, the teams that are selling, you look at the teams that are out of it, nobody really has that good to great young starting pitcher. There are some relievers. I mean, San Diego has Brad Hand. You know, you mentioned Kansas City with Kelvin Herrera. Those guys are good. But when it comes to starting pitchers, it's more middle of the pack than it is top of the pack. And so for that reason, I don't want to trade Jacob DeGrom. I've said that on record. But with that said, they probably get more for him today than they ever would get for him because of that, right?
Right. That's a very good point. And I think that there's a certain school of thought, and I believe it, that if you're a baseball executive and you have got the guy, whoever the guy is for that particular year, and the Yankees had two of those guys in Chapman and Miller, when you've got the guy, his value is probably never going to be higher than it is when there is that frenzy at the middle of the season and you've got contenders saying, oh, this is my opportunity. Let's take, for example, I realize it's not going to happen in the same division, but a team like the Nationals. Well, if Strasburg's shoulder thing becomes a long-term issue, or if Ohtani's elbow becomes a long-term issue, you've got teams that are trying desperately to win with the likes of Harper and Trout. How much are they going to pay if they have got who they believe is like the Verlander-type ace to put them over the top? These are those times when giving up prospects does make a lot of sense, and I think that you're right, that you've got that piece in DeGrom that probably would fetch the highest value right now, but it's a very difficult thing, I think, in New York, as much probably more than any other place, and you guys know this better than me, for you to say, listen, we've got a great player, but we're going to give him up, and almost understandably diminish our quality in the near term for the long-term possible payoff years down the line. That's a hard thing to do in New York. Brian Cashman did it, but of course he did that less than 10 years after having won the World Series. I think there was a little capital there where the Mets not having won since 86 probably hurts them and the ability to say, you know what, we're going to have this reboot here because we believe it's in the best long-term interest for the organization. It's a harder thing to do, I believe, right now for the Mets than it was for the Yankees.
Who right now, it's pretty defined in the American League who the best teams are, obviously. How about the National League? I mean, who do you look at in the National League that really jumps out at you right now? Much more competitive in the National League, much more even. How about that?
Yeah, I think right now the Cubs are still the best team. The Dodgers, if they get fully healthy, but I think the Cubs, as they are right now, of course, a big win for them last night in Milwaukee in a bit of a statement series for them. I think for me, they are the best team right now. The Dodgers, if they get everybody back, and interestingly to point out, the Dodgers have used 11 different starting pitchers this year. That's the most of any team in baseball besides the Rays, who, of course, are doing that very unique avant-garde start the relievers mentality.
Right.
So the Dodgers, 11 different starting pitchers. If they get their guys back, if Maeda is back, if Hill is back healthy, and most importantly, Kershaw, if all of them come back, then the Dodgers may well be that team, but of course they're still operating without Corey Seager. So I think for the moment, I would still say the Cubs have done a nice job, I think, of reformulating their club a little bit from last year and rebooting that bullpen. I think for now the Cubs are the team and a big statement win for them in extra innings last night against the Milwaukee Brewers.
Indeed, took over first place now in the National League Central, and guess what? They're probably not going to look back. I don't think they are, at least. John Paul, we appreciate you coming on. Thank you very much, man.
Thank you, John.
My pleasure, guys. All the best. We'll hopefully catch up again later on in the season.
Appreciate it.
John Paul Morosi, Fox Sports, talking baseball and the trade deadline.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly.